go. We are. So we're at the Administration Committee meeting of Wednesday, March 16th, 2016. We have myself, Alderman Olszewski, Alderman Frieders, Alderman Teeling, and Alderman Gorlis, and staff present, and Alderman Kovas visiting us today. So, any citizens' comments? None? Minutes for correction and for approval. February 17th, 2016. Comments, questions? We all good? Okay, we're all good. So let's go on to new business, admin 2016-15, the monthly budget report for February 2016. You're on, Rob.
All right, well, I don't have too much to say other than sales tax. You actually will see the holiday sales tax numbers in next month's budget report, but I can tell you they're good. They're actually up 7% over last year, which is outstanding. So actually, we should see about $30,000 more than what we initially projected in the fiscal year 17 budget. So that's definitely good news, and it'll have a positive impact on our bottom line.
I put the top 10 months of sales tax ever underlined there. And so you can see the Christmas 2015 sales taxes there are number one by far, which is good. And then the top three have all been within the last calendar year, really. So that's really good. Hide all the Facebook viewers at home, I'm assuming.
Hi.
Hello. This is government transparency at its finest, I think.
Nobody comes to our meetings, so our meetings are going to everyone. Hi, everyone. Okay. Starts bragging.
Gotta get it.
Okay, all right. Yeah, so it, as Rob said, this isn't on the actual budget report yet. It will be next month, but I thought it was, very good to show. And, you know, when you see our 2015 calendar year numbers, they're higher than they've ever been, too. So we are seeing 3, 4, 5%, year-over-year growth, month-to-month, and then also year-to-year, it's percentage points up, too. So that's good.
Okay. Any other comments on the budget report or questions?
I actually have two questions. You can hold that. Thanks. I look pretty good, thanks. Page 14 of my packet, probably page 12 of yours, on the first page of the budget report, under 01, last 4 years of 4071, BDD tax downtown. Mm-hmm. For business development districts, are those overlapping with TIFs or are they the same thing?
So, it is contained within the downtown TIF. The business district in the downtown is generally the Imperial Investments West Block. Mm-hmm. So it's the spaces that formerly held Mongolian, Barley Fork, and Cobblestone. And I don't believe that we added any other geographic areas. I'd have to go back and check. So, and the fact that some of those have closed obviously is one of the reasons why it hasn't met its revenue target. And then additionally too, I'm not sure we ever really had a full year of all three of those businesses being open at the same time that we could have generated a reliable estimate. So that $20,000 was probably a good plug number.
Okay. So that makes sense as to why the numbers just kind of drop off after September.
Yes.
And that countryside's up and down, but that will obviously improve. And then under MISC intergovernmental, we have a line item for $45,000. Where is it? I have to zoom.
Circuit court fines? Is that the one you're looking at?
No, under liquor license, why would we assume that we're going to have $45,000 in revenue when it's only 10% of that?
Well, it's the renewal process. Mm-hmm. You'll start to see those numbers come in March and April, because that's when people renew. So it's always pretty lagging until the last 2 months of the fiscal year, and then it always ends up right around $45,000.
So we make $41,000 in liquor licenses in 2 months?
Yes, and that generally includes everybody renewing, which they usually do, and then also a certain amount of transfers between ownership, which is additional fees each year too.
Gotcha. And then on page 18 for me, probably 16 for you, under community development expenditures, I had already sent an email on this, but is building and permitting listed under community development?
Yes.
Okay. All right, that's it for me for the budget questions.
Anybody else? Okay, we're all good. Let's move on to 2, admin 2016-16, the quarterly budget report.
This is a quarterly budget report that we'd like to present to this committee after the end of each fiscal quarter, exploring the rich tapestry of our fiscal year budget. So we're going to, this is the first one that goes through January 31st, so we'll do one July, October, January, and April. It covers the city's four main operating funds: general fund, water, sewer, park and rec, revenues and expenditures. Talks about some of the things that we thought about when we were doing the fiscal year 16 budget, how the actual results are so far coming, and also some projections about where we think certain revenues in particular will end up at the end of fiscal year 16. So again, unless there's any questions or comments.
Questions on this? Okay. Can we send this on for review, or is it just?
This would just be an informational item. It's basically like a more comprehensive look at the monthly budget report.
Okay, let's go on to 3, admin 2016-17, the monthly treasurer's report for February 2016.
Projected beginning fund balance of $14,258,052, year-to-date revenues of $29,093,489, year-to-date expenses of $25,285,710, for a projected ending fund balance of $18,065,831.
Comments, questions on the treasurer report? Okay, let's move on to 4, admin 2016-18, cash statement for January 2016.
This is just informational as always. First page shows our cash balances at the city's various bank accounts, and the second page shows our investments in CDs.
Comments, questions? Okay. Let's go on to 5, admin 2016-19, bills for payment. Comments, questions? Are we looking for something?
I'm waiting for it to come up. Sorry, hold on. Looking at the general ledger ledger activity in the original budget report, there was fees for both GovHub and MSI. So we use both of them instead of just the MSI module. We're using both.
Well, the MSI, they charge us a monthly fee to upkeep the MyGovHub.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, and then there's also credit card fees.
Right. Right. So there's a couple like reimbursements or credits from MyGovHub that are later, like there's a couple voided in the check ledger. But they seem to be charged at a later date, but it's the same kind of amount. But the MSI is like $15,000.
Well,
so
that's
my GovHub is like monthly.
Is monthly.
MSI is an annual contract.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was just saying, $150 is much preferable to $15,000. But then I saw that they keep on recurring. But the MSI is only once.
Right.
Okay.
And the $15,000 is just the annual maintenance agreement that we pay for all the modules.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, MSI includes accounts receivable, accounts payables, HR,
permitting.
You know, yeah, general ledger, yeah. Permitting, utility billing.
Okay, so it's not just the people paying for their water bill online then?
Correct.
No.
Okay. Because every time we talk about MSI, that's the part of the using credit cards online that always seems to stick with me is MSI and MyGovHub. But to see two separate fees, one be so high, one be so low, is kind of confusing. But yeah, that's a little high.
Okay, anybody else? Okay, we're good with that. Let's go on to number 6, admin 2016-20, monthly website report for February 2016.
Okay, so there is a report in your packet from Nicole. She's not here this evening, obviously, to present it. Nothing really new to report. The data's in there. If anybody has any questions, happy to answer them.
What's the name of the service?
PIWIC.
PIWIC. Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? Okay, so let's go on to 7, admin 2016-21, water, sewer, and road infrastructure fee renewal.
Okay, so each year we have recommended approval of ordinances reauthorizing the water infrastructure fee, sewer infrastructure fee, and road infrastructure fee. This year in the budget proposal, we have the same fees and dollar amounts that we did last year. Technically, we need to reauthorize those before we do our first billing, which isn't until June, but we like to get it done before the start of the fiscal year. That way there's no question as to whether they can be applied or not. And so we are recommending that we would at least reauthorize those for another year. We've typically put a one-year sunset on them each year. We don't recommend to change that this year. And so figured we'd bring the ordinances to you in March, even though you haven't debated the budget in full yet. That way, you know, when they get in front of you in April for approval, they are not new to you.
Comments, questions on these?
So there's no increase in fees in the city of Yorkville?
We're not recommending any fee increases this year. No.
Excellent.
You're fine? Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're, these, this ordinance, you said we don't need to move it on now, or we?
I'd recommend it be put on the April 12th city council agenda. I think it's the 12th. Yes.
Are we, everybody's good with that?
Yep.
Okay, consent agenda?
No, I would put it on the regular agenda. If we were raising it, I'm just kidding. No, but I would, either way, this is actually good news, so we might as well talk about it.
Okay, well, there you got a good one. Okay, regular agenda. Is everybody okay with that?
Yes.
Okay, let's go on to 8, admin 2016-22, post insurance compliance policy.
Issuance.
Right, it's actually, well, technically it's called procedures concerning tax compliance for tax exempt borrowings, but I call it the post-issuance compliance policy for short. Basically what this does is it kind of memorializes the procedures that we already have in place for things that we need to comply with after we issue debt. The IRS recommends that we have a written policy in place. It's been informal. I mean, I've been keeping up with this stuff, but at the recommendation of our bond counsel with the most recent SSA deal, they recommended that we put something in writing in place. So here it is. Basically, it deals with two main things that I think the IRS are concerned with are arbitrage and private business use, neither of which have really been an issue here. But I think it's certainly a good thing that we get this down in writing and have a formal policy in place should the IRS ever want to see one.
Okay, comments, questions? Everybody's fine?
I have to defer to the professional here.
Okay. Consent agenda? All right, let's move that one on. So the 9, admin 2016-23, fiscal year 17 insurance renewals.
Okay, so this is going to be a little bit of a briefer conversation than we have had in the past few years, simply because we haven't finalized our recommendations yet. We're still working with the broker on a couple different options related to quotes for life insurance and then actually narrowing down the exact cost of the health insurance proposal. But I can kind of go through what we've seen, what we're most likely to be recommending. I'm going to throw a lot of numbers out at you. And then, you know, we'll bring that to you, I would assume, next week. Do these all have to be approved by the end of March, or can they be done in April?
They have to be done by the end of March.
Okay. So at the next city council meeting, we'll have a full formal recommendation. So in general, from year to year, we budgeted an 8% increase in health, dental, life, and vision. Okay, vision, we don't have to talk about this year because we approved a two-year contract last year, so that's no concern. Starting with the easiest one, life, we did receive a pretty favorable quote from a new carrier, off the top of my head, I think it was Lincoln. That should be about 20% down from what we've been currently paying. The bad news on that is the total cost of life insurance for the city is only about 10 grand, so 9 grand. So hopefully we'll save ourselves $1,000 or $2,000 there. The X factor is that we have an insurance company that's yet to provide a quote, but when they do, there's a possibility that if we pair it with our Blue Cross Blue Shield renewal, that we would actually have a discount on our Blue Cross Blue Shield health insurance renewal. So if that comes in, even if it's similar to what we've already got existing, it would actually save us more money to get the discount on the health insurance because that is so expensive. Okay, so that's life insurance in a nutshell there. Dental, we're looking at a couple different plans. MetLife had provided a quote that was between 5% and 9% below what we are currently at, but it has different benefits. So the main issue for employees has been the rollover provision that our current dental provider has, which is Guardian, where if you don't use your dental benefits from this year to next year, you can actually roll over those benefits into a future year and use them, which is a very good benefit. So, you know, dental is around $100,000 a year, so we had budgeted for an 8% increase on that. The original quote for Guardian came in at 12%, but we think that that might actually be a little bit lower, come next week. So we'll see there. And then if not, we've got an option to go with maybe a little bit less benefits through MetLife and save ourselves $5,000 or $6,000 there. So, not a huge dollar amount we're talking about in comparison to health insurance, but, still something we look at. Okay, with health insurance, and you'll have to jump in here as I either mess things up or just don't explain something as clearly as it needs to be. The city offers one HMO and two PPOs. The two PPOs, we have, well, I'll call it the more rich benefits plan. It's our normal PPO plan that we've been offering for, I think, the past 4 or 5 years. Blue Cross Blue Shield gave us a quote on that, and it was 18% for that individual plan higher than it was last year. The second plan was a less rich PPO plan that just had less benefits overall, and that we were offering to employees at a reduced employee contribution rate. So if somebody was willing to take on more of the risk for out-of-pocket costs themselves on insurance, they would take that, save themselves some money on employee contributions, and save the city money. Long story short, a lot of the Affordable Care Act regulations on that second PPO plan basically just made it either untenable or illegal for Blue Cross Blue Shield to offer again. So that second plan is likely to be scratched this year entirely through our offer. So it's going to kick. There's only two people who had offered it or had taken it in the entire city of 75 employees. So we would work with them to, either help them out with the HMO or the PPO. The HMO, we are likely to recommend a plan that has an HRA component, which is the little debit card that you get if you're a PPO member. It'll be structured a little bit differently. The idea being that we would keep the same deductible and out-of-pocket limits for HMO employees currently, and the city would take on some additional risk through this HRA card. But overall, we would save money because the higher deductible plan has less of a premium. So hopefully there, that cost last year to provide the HMO for all the employees that took it was about $380,000. The original quote came back at 16%, which is $440,000. So that's a swing of 60 grand there. With this new plan that we're recommending, we think we can get it down to about $425,000. So we've cut it down $15,000 or $20,000, but it still is about $20,000 to $25,000 more than what we had budgeted for. Okay. On the PPO side, similar story. The original quote again was 18% above, and we're actually recommending a slightly different plan that is only 14% up. And through the broker's efforts, they've managed to pare down some of the fees. So in aggregate, we think we can get that down to like a 10 or 11% increase, which ends up being still about $45,000 more than what we had budgeted on that individual plan. So we are looking at a potential overage compared to what we had budgeted of about $40,000 or $50,000, but there's still some work to be done there. But in general, that PPO plan would have the same deductibles generally for single and family and same out of pockets. It would just change to a different in-network coverage percentage. It would go down from 100% coverage to 80% coverage after you've hit your deductible, but it wouldn't necessarily impact employees anymore other than people who are single. So that's something, because it's going to be a little bit of a change. We'll have to, in the next week or two after we approve it and roll it out, just talk to employees about the potential, small increase in their deductible or out-of-pocket. But again, that's potentially 5 employees out of 75. So the majority of employees would still see the same type of HMO and PPO that they currently have. It would cost the city more money. It's going to cost the employees more money. The reason that we're not recommending to either jump ship to either a different broker or a pool or a different cover carrier, Humana, United, is because our claims were very bad this year. So the loss ratio, I'm assuming that's a public number. Okay, so the loss ratio on our insurance, health insurance last year, was 140%. So for every dollar that we paid to Blue Cross Blue Shield, they paid out $1.40 in claims. So we got a really good deal on health insurance based on our claims this year, and Blue Cross Blue Shield is, you know, upside down on it. So they've got to recover some of that from us at some point or another if we stay with them. Because we have such bad claims, it makes us really unattractive to jump ship. So, you know, ideally, if we really wanted to rock the boat and try to pare down, you know, or if we just didn't like Blue Cross Blue Shield or something, you know, we should be jumping ship when claims are good and then we look really attractive to either a pool or somebody else. So the broker didn't recommend that we change. We don't think it's a good idea to, just based on that fact. It is a little bit more money, I think, than we had planned to spend. But if you look through the alternative sheet, which we'll give out at City Council, there really aren't any plans that are going to save us money because our claim history was so poor without offering something that's like half the benefits of what we currently have, which, you know, we've always tried to, if we're going to reduce benefits a little bit, to do it incrementally and over time. So, you know, it's unfortunate that things are a little bit more expensive than we wanted them to be and that we budgeted. But, you know, we have seen, I think, you know, lower costs than we had expected over time. So, Joe, anything else that I maybe missed?
No, not really. I mean, there are, hopefully here in the next week or so, just a couple of things of playing with the plan designs a little bit in terms of the shift and eliminating the one plan design, and knowing that with some of the out-of-pockets mandated by the Affordable Care Act, there is a possibility of some additional savings. So it's kind of hard to nail that down and say, here's what it is. We'll probably know a year from now. But there are some possibilities where someone did have the possibility to spend $6,000 of a reimbursement under the old plan, where they'll cap out at $3,500. Right. So if you've had some claimants in that category that were hitting the debit card hard, you're going to be saving $2,500 per bad risk in those categories. So that'll be more savings for the city, but we won't know what that is until next year.
Right.
Can you explain that, was it HR?
HRA.
Okay. Yeah. Who contributes? Is that the city just putting the money in?
Yes.
It's no employees putting the money in.
Correct.
And so it's a debit card. Do employees have to have their own account, a certain account set up with that, or no?
Yeah.
Like they have an account a separate account set up in their name. Okay. It's a promise to reimburse should they incur the claim.
Okay.
So even though the account is in their name, it is mm-hmm. the city's money. Mm-hmm. So if they don't spend it, it just goes back to the city for the next year. We had 71% of the money set aside spent last year.
Which is about industry average, I think, from last
For the setup of the debit card that you have, when you pick up $3,000 of the $3,500, we usually run in the 70 to 75% range.
Is there an HRA, I'm not that familiar with them, where employees contribute into it? I mean, are there some insurances like that?
There are, they're just not very popular, because if an employee contributes to it, you then have to have these ongoing accounts where it's the employee's money
easier.
And it's set aside and things like that. So
like car insurance, it's like 3 years the claim stays on. How long do these claims affect our rates, generally?
It depends on the claim. So for example, you guys had 13 claims over $25,000. It's kind of unreal for the size of your group, but you just had a really bad year. Of those 13, 12 of them are active and ongoing.
Oh.
So not only did they pay it, they expect more claims in the future.
Oh, gotcha.
Usually that means high pharmacy usage. Because once you start taking something, you're typically not, it's a maintenance bed going forward. Give you an example, there's a new wonder drug out there that is going to stop heart attacks. It is going to lower the bad cholesterol for anybody that takes it by 70%. In addition to anything you may already be taking, it'll drop your bad cholesterol an additional 70%. So they're saying this drug is going to be phenomenal. It's going to stop heart attacks. It's $25,000 a year.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Blue Cross is going to cover it.
Wow.
All of the carriers are going to cover it. So for example, we're sitting here a year from now and that drug has hit the market and four of your employees take it, add $100,000 to your renewal. Because Blue Cross is just going to shift that cost. They know that person will be taking that forever.
So when you have a person having those claims, it's just not even, we're talking that's their medicine, it's their prescriptions are. So you could have, like you said, 4 or 5 people taking expensive medicines that they have mm-hmm. to have.
Right.
So it isn't just like a hospital stay or something catastrophic. It's just, it all adds together, I guess, is what you're saying.
Well, that someone taking that pharmacy is probably 5 times worse than someone having a heart attack. Mm-hmm. Heart attacks now, they're real good, and they're typically one and dones.
It'll kick out.
So someone has a heart attack, they put in a stent or they take care of them, and it's mm-hmm. usually okay.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not that worried about it. Mm-hmm. Whereas with these type of medications, they know that person's on for good. So until they come off of your group, that money's been built into your rate going forward. Pharmacy's trending at 15%. And they said it's going to trend at 15% again next year. So it's going to be a cumulative effect.
Mm-hmm.
So we're really worried about that because there's no generics coming down the road that's going to stop that.
What's the name of the drug?
It's got one of those weird names like PH7 something Z. I don't know what it's called. I don't know what they're going to call it.
Connection.
They'll probably call it the insurance premium killer or something.
That's creepy because once they start spending $25,000 a year on a medication that's supposedly going to do all these things that you say, they're going to need $40,000 to $50,000 to kind of pay for the things that are going to be damaged by that particular drug. So that's pretty interesting. That's devastating. But hey, it does something.
One other question I had. You said, backing up, I think on the one PPO that it's an 80%. Is it 100% coverage now on it? Or
it is 100% after you hit your deductible for single and family. The way that this new plan is going to be structured, because the out-of-pocket is actually going to be the same amount as the deductible, families would see 100% coverage, basically. But the single people, between their deductible and their out-of-pocket, would see an 80% reimbursement.
What is their deductible at now?
It's at $3,500. So, and we cover...
Like a single person, $35,000.
Correct.
And a family, $35,000.
And we cover $3,000 of that through the HRA card.
Gotcha.
Family is $6,850.
Okay.
So, but the family out-of-pocket still is $6,850, but the single person out-of-pocket is $5,800. So there is an additional $2,300 of out-of-pocket that would be reimbursed, or would be paid for, no, it would be reimbursed at an 80% level.
So you can get your deductibles out of your HRA?
Yes.
Okay. I don't have one of those.
Yeah. So just without anything else having been done between today and Tuesday, we think that between the plan design changes that we think we're going to recommend and the broker's work in just negotiating BCBS down, that we're probably at like 11, 12, or 13% rather than 18, which is what they originally came in at. So significant reduction. We just have a little bit more work to do, and we've got to get everything actually formal for a recommendation, too.
Any comments or questions on this? Okay. Well, we'll see that City Council then.
Mm-hmm.
So, old business, admin 2014-89, Joe's favorite subject, the Aurora Area Convention and Visitor Bureau Agreement, and he's not going to yell.
So, probably.
So
I have three verbal updates for you. So at the last meeting, said that we would continue along with the AACVB, and that we'd also get a quote from a consultant to do the study. Okay, so I've reached out to a consultant, haven't heard back from them yet. I did get a verbal commitment from Oswego's administrator that they would split the cost of the study with us. So I'm hoping that it'll be $7,000 or $8,000 per municipality. We've got that budgeted. They do too. So we'll continue down that path. I met with Court and Pete, who's the new director of sales at the Bureau, yesterday. And I don't know, Chris, if you've had a chance to meet with him yet.
I haven't yet.
Okay. So he is, I think the actual position is director of sales and marketing and sports tourism. So he explained it to me as like the biggest profit margin that everybody can have, municipal, you know, contributions, you know, hotel room stays and everything, is generated by sports tourism. Tournaments, you know, people going on multi-day visits to baseball fields or soccer fields, playing a tournament and then going home. These people are there for 72 hours, you know, they've got long, you know, lag times basically between games, so they go out and spend money and visit and see other things. And so he sees that as like the most efficient use of a tourism bureau's time in generating the most amount of hotel stays. So at first I was a little skeptical. I thought maybe they were just doing that because we're the only municipality that has a parks and recreation department, you know, compared to the other 10. But he said that he's meeting with all the park districts to figure out what their facilities are that are available, figuring out what we've got, along with hopefully Justine's project coming back in front of us in the next few months. And so he would take that as basically his base level of knowledge on facilities, and would go to national and state conferences and try to rein in like regional tournaments that would actually drive a lot of people here. So his previous position in Elgin for their CVB, and then also for the North Shore CVB, was sports marketing and tourism. So it's good that they've got that experience. It benefits us both, hopefully, from the hotel stays and then also from field rentals and tournament revenue. So that's a big deal for us if that's ends up, you know, what the majority of his time is spent on. So, and they're also working, he said that they'll be working on all the traditional destination marketing and, you know, convention type recruitment stuff. But sports tourism is like the one thing that he said, like, you know, you really haven't been doing, and that's probably the best thing to do. So hopefully, you know, that's at least fruitful. So we're continuing down there. I impressed upon both of them again, based on the committee's, you know, discussions from the last meetings, that, you know, we need data. We need to be able to see how much we're putting in, how much we're getting out of it, you know, what the sales leads are actually doing for the hotels. So we'll see that there. Alternatively, I've contacted the Heritage Corridor Visitors Bureau, which is a larger visitors bureau, I believe. Generally encompasses like Joliet and goes all the way down to like Ottawa. And I said, hey, we're studying options. Like, you know, have you ever done this before where you've accepted somebody? You know, what can you offer us? And they actually sent us a nice couple flyers that said like, oh yeah, we've got all these partners and they're all at different dollar amounts. And they've got nonprofit partners and business partners. And so everybody has their own little like want. And so they basically put together like a mini business plan for each one of the partners and say like, if you're going to contribute $10,000, we're going to give you, you know, two newspaper ad buys and the circulation is this amount. So exactly what I've been looking for, or what everybody's been looking for from the AACBB, they've already said like, oh yeah, no, just let us know whatever your dollar amount is. We'll do a quick meeting. We can figure it out. And they know that we're just kind of like, you know, shopping around and trying to figure out different options. So we'll see where that goes. That's going to be probably one meeting with their executive director, Ben Benson, who's the Lockport administrator, who I know just through city management groups. And then Steve Jones is actually the current assistant manager in Joliet. He's also on their board too. So we had started the AACBB conversation with him when he was the manager in Oswego. So that's good news too. So, and Oswego knows all this too. I'm assuming that somebody from Oswego will probably be joining me whenever we have the brief conversation with Heritage Corridor. And then we've got at least four or five different options that we can say, you know, private option where we do it ourselves, AACBB's offer, and then another tourism bureau just to see what else is out there. So I think we've got a couple different.
And this Heritage Corridor, can you Google them and you can see who's
in
them?
So yeah, you can see their board. Their budget seems to be bigger. I haven't had a chance to actually like put it side by side yet, you know, it seems like they're heavy into ad buys. I mean, it's like Starved Rock is in it, the Joliet Speedway is in it, so they have a lot of major tourist attractions that their board is a lot more diverse too. It's not just municipalities. So
you can switch bureaus.
Yeah, it's an intergovernmental agreement basically that we have with the bureaus. It's just, you know, if we dissolve that intergovernmental agreement with our, you know, participation, we just don't get, you know, tourism funding. So, but we could jump into another bureau and still have access to.
Well, how come we didn't look in that before? I didn't even realize that.
I don't. It really didn't even, like, I didn't even think about it until, like, 2-3 weeks ago.
So. I thought that somebody said that the bureaus know, like, cause someone, when someone was doing some research.
Yeah.
And they contact each other and they told them, oh yeah, they're looking, you know, so.
Yeah, that didn't seem to be a big deal to them.
Like so. It's competition now.
It might be, yeah.
Well, maybe that's what they need is some competition.
Right. I didn't know that we could do that.
If you look on the map, it kind of goes down 294 through 80 towards 39, so it's not that big of a stretch.
No.
And I mean, if Joliet's involved, I mean, hell, you look at our large map, Joliet's in the far right corner.
Right.
So it's not like we're,
That's a,
I'm just like, is flabbergasted the right word, Chris? I didn't know we had options. Like, I thought it was either them or us.
That's why we did this, and this is why we've been talking about it since
so I'm going to stand up and clap.
Since 2014.
This is excellent.
So we got to find the option.
To be fair, I don't know whether it's a good option.
Well, but
no, it doesn't matter if it's a good option.
Yeah.
It's
an
option.
Yeah.
It's something to explore. So thank you for finding that.
Yes, that's exciting.
So when do you think you might meet with them? And
I would say within the next week or two.
So maybe
Next
time we'll have some more info?
Yep. I've got a meeting with Dan DeSanto to talk about sharing stuff on Friday. So I would assume that at that meeting we'll probably end up coordinating schedules to meet with them. So we'll see what happens.
Oh, so Oswego would go too.
Well, they're going to at least go to the meeting and just hear it out.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
You know, it's very little effort for... You know,
anybody
having an option to say, like, you know, if we're going to spend $50,000, here's what it could look like over here.
So then
I guess I never realized, like, who else was around us that had those.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, because you just think that's Aurora's probably such a big area. Never thought of it.
And then because of the way that they do business, which is kind of the way that we had been saying, why don't they just provide this stuff? Is the board made up? It's not the same kind of organization as the ACBP.
There is a little bit of a different setup because there are so many nonprofit and business partners. Mm-hmm. It almost, my initial glance was that it is like not as simple as ours. So I know we've got like 25 board members or whatever, and then there's, you know, tourism people that are on there from, you know, Raging Waves and all these other hotels and stuff. But here it seemed to be more like destination marketing, like somebody from like the INM Canal Trail system,
right,
and stuff. And so I haven't quite figured out exactly what their bylaws state, but it could be, you know, could be a little different.
Well, just another thing to keep in mind is if we've never heard of it, they're obviously not very good. But then again, looking at their website,
I don't know if it's we never heard about them. We just never, I think we never looked. We didn't think out of the box of what else was there.
But again, that's a perfect comment. It's like blinders. It's either
what
we've always done,
right,
or we just do it ourselves, which is,
mm-hmm,
and they're both equally terrifying. So, I mean, this is just, it's a glimmer of hope, and I'm happy about that. That's really cool.
And just so you know, like, I'm going into the meetings on all these other options as saying, if, you know, we're probably not going to jump ship unless if we can convince the board here, obviously, but then also the hotels that this is a better option.
Right.
So I know that the hotels have always been a little worried about us backing out and doing like what Oswego or what Aurora has done and just divert the money elsewhere, you know, to something that we have control over. So, you know, I told Lynn today when we were talking about it, like, you can just let the hotel owners know that, you know, we're not going to go to the Heritage Corridor Visitors Bureau unless it's clearly a better option. So.
So when you talk to them, it's like, well, what are you going to do for our hotels?
Have to know. Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
They're going to do.
Yeah, the same thing.
And
as
maybe
we've
they
been
can give us something more finite than this group on.
Yes. The same things that we've been asking for from the AACBB, I would hope that another visitor's group would be able to provide.
And hopefully they can provide.
I just think it's so silly that we get this money from hotels and we give it to someone else to take care of them. Why do we just not collect that tax and let the hotels deal with who they want to deal with? I mean, why can't they do that? Doesn't that make more sense? It's their money. It's their money that they're collecting. And all of a sudden, now there's this layer that's making decisions for the businesses.
There you
it's
go,
so
assuming
crazy.
They know what to do with money.
Because if you get big enough, like with the Heritage Corridor Visitors Bureau, or even the AACBB, the combined effort.
Well,
you know,
I understand that, but the
like
hotels could do the combined effort on their own. I don't know. It's just so frustrating that we have to get this money and now we have to make this decision on something that's affecting a business.
And back to the sports idea that they're having. So we do have like brunch for tournaments. What else do we have for sports? We talked about one time having soccer. We don't have soccer.
It'd be really any open space park that's got a lined baseball and soccer field, at least for the tournament.
Hey, we have a park. We can put soccer up here.
Yeah, it'd be like an overflow practice area. Like the example he gave is there's a complex up in Elgin that's got 15 fields on it. And so, you know, you book a tournament and all 15 fields are probably being used most of the day, mm-hmm. every day. But then there's other teams in there that aren't playing and they either want somewhere to go and just hang out or they want somewhere to go and practice or, you know, maybe you've got like a play-in game or something that's, you know, less important. So, you know, they will actually do it even if it's off-site and like 5 miles away. So, you know, we may not be hosting a tournament here at Beecher Park, but maybe there's like an offshoot of it that, you know, is needed.
That makes sense.
Okay, anything else? Okay, any additional business?
I just wanted to say ACB.
Oh, okay. All right. So I guess if we don't have anything else, we can call this meeting at 6:40. Thank you, everybody.